This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
The brain can change itself. It's a plastic living organ that can actually change its own structure and function, even into old age. Arguably the most important breakthrough in neuroscience since scientists first sketched out the brain's basic anatomy, this revolutionary discovery called neuroplasticity promises to overthrow the centuries-old notion that the adult brain is fixed and unchanging. The brain is not, as was thought, like a machine or hardwired like a computer. Neuroplasticity not only gives us hope to those with mental limitations or what was thought to be incurable brain damage, but expands our understanding of the healthy brain and the resilience of human nature. My guest is Dr. Norman Doidge. He's a psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, and researcher on the faculty at the Columbia University Center for Psychoanalytic Training and Research in New York and the University of Toronto's Department of Psychiatry. He's an author, essayist, poet. His new book, The Brain That Changes Itself, Stories of Personal Triumph from the Frontiers of Brain Science. Good afternoon, Norman. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So tell us, it's an awfully big word, neuroplasticity. You're going to have to unpack this for us and tell us. This sounds absolutely like a completely revolutionary understanding of what we have always thought about the brain.
Indeed it is. Neuro stands for having to do with the nervous system or neurons, which are the nerve cells in the brain. And plasticity means modifiable, adaptable, changeable. And neuroplasticity is what is emerging as the brain's perhaps most important property. And what it means is that your brain can change its structure and its function depending on what it does or what you do with it. And this is so revolutionary because the brain has been thought to be, and is still thought in many quarters to be, hardwired. What that means is people believe that the brain was like a very complex machine or computer, I'm sure you've heard that many times, with genetically predetermined circuits that each only performed one function. Machines have parts, and each part, it was believed, performed one function and one function alone. And if that part was damaged, there was nothing you could really do about it. Now, if I say that the brain is neuroplastic and it can change its structure and its function, what I mean is that it alters and improves its functioning depending on what you do with it, depending on the task at hand, depending on its response to the environment, the things you see and hear all lead to brain changes. And most interestingly, it can change its structure and its function and improve both when you think or when you imagine certain things.
And we're not just talking about psychologically in terms of your thoughts and the way they relate to each other. You are talking about physically, anatomically, the brain can change.
Yes. When you think certain thoughts repeatedly, and everything I'm talking about has been corroborated by brain scans and new techniques, when you think thoughts, it actually turns certain of your genes on and others of them off to produce certain proteins and modifications in the actual structure of the nerve cells. So, for instance, as you learn something, two nerves that are connected and are involved with that might go from having 1,300 connections between them to 2,700 connections. It's a staggering physical change, and this is going on while you're learning something.
We're talking with Dr. Norman Doidge. His new book is The Brain That Changes Itself. Is this a controversial idea? Are there parts of medicine that are saying, no, this isn't true?
Well, till very recently, yes, it has been, people just didn't believe it. They didn't believe it because, first of all, the overall view of the brain since the founding of modern science was that it was like a machine. It was a mechanistic idea. The beginning of modern science basically saw the whole universe as subject to mechanical laws, the mechanical laws of physics. And the first great discoveries in medicine seemed to support that. The heart was determined to be like a pump, and the blood vessels were very much like vessels. So that's a pretty comprehensible machine.
Following in the wake of sort of Newtonian science.
Exactly, exactly. William Harvey made that discovery. And then the great philosopher René Descartes declared that the brain was also like a pump with currents going up and down the nerves. And he wasn't so far wrong. The currents turn out to be electrical currents. But he basically laid the groundwork for thinking of it as a machine, which turns out to have been a mistake. It's a bad metaphor.
Let's talk about some of these people that you have met and some of these very real-life stories where you have seen folks actually reinvent their own brains physically. Perhaps you can tell us about a stroke victim.
Well, one of the people I interviewed was Dr. Michael Bernstein, who's an ophthalmologist. And he was in his 50s. He was, you know, a fairly young man when he had a totally devastating stroke. He was 54. It was incapacitating. He couldn't raise his leg. He couldn't use his hands. And this man was a surgeon. Basically, the entire left side of his body was paralyzed. And he got the typical amount of rehabilitation people would get. It was for about 5 weeks altogether. And then he was off on his own. And because people thought that the brain was like a machine, and machines don't grow new parts and can't reorganize themselves, it was typically, and still is in many quarters, assumed that, you know, the benefits you get right after the stroke are all you're going to get. You know, it's sort of like the swelling goes down and it's assumed that you're left with whatever damage you had. But doing some, he lived in Alabama where one of the most important researchers in this area, Edward Tolb, had developed a new series of brain exercises for patients with strokes. And he was, Dr. Bernstein was one of the first to get this, you know, very sort of incremental trainings that went on intensively, very intensively, most of the day for 2 weeks solid. And by the end of it, he could use his hand and he could use his leg again. And he was back playing tennis. And Dr. Tolb has been able to help people who had, one man I spoke to had his stroke 50 years before he got the Tolb treatment at the Tolb Clinic, Taub Clinic, I mispronounced that. And was able to make improvements. And that work has also been extended to help people who have speech problems. And his work is helping people with traumatic brain injuries. I actually think that his work would be very helpful for some of the vets who are coming back, or some of the wounded warriors who are coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq right now. Would love to see that treatment in the VA system. I think it'd be very helpful because he's helped people with traumatic brain injuries. And as you know, that a record number of soldiers are returning with that problem.
We're talking with Dr. Norman Doidge. The new book is The Brain That Changes Itself. And the phone lines, of course, are open at 977-1070 if you have a question for Dr. Doidge. Let me ask you about your experience in looking at children with autism and their brains. This, of course, hits very close to my house, having a 5-year-old son who's dealing with autism. What does your research show there?
Okay. Well, let me just give you a little background. One of the important people working in this area is Dr. Michael Merzenich, and he developed a program that's sold by Scientific Learning for kids with learning disorders. People who have trouble processing language, and I interviewed kids who basically took this this computer program. These were kids who had trouble reading and trouble hearing clearly and following instructions, and in about 6 weeks, they could get up to normal or even above normal using this program. Now, many kids with autism have relatives with learning disabilities, and kids with autism often have learning disabilities themselves. They seem to be related in some way. And because this program was given to lots of kids with learning disabilities, some who took it had autism. And one of the little girls with autism who took it was, I call Laura Lee in the book. And she basically had terrible language problems, and she didn't respond to her own name. She had almost her own private language, which was typically unintelligible to her parents. If she wanted juice, she didn't ask for it. She'd make gestures or pull her parents to the cabinets. And she had other typical autistic symptoms, all sorts of unusual repetitive movements, flapping of the hands, toe walking. and unusual sensitivities to sound.
Mm-hmm.
She'd often cover her ears. Anyway, she took the program for about 2 hours a day for 8 weeks. And when she finished it, she had an explosion of language, and she could begin to speak more, complete sentences, talk about her feelings and her days at school. And this was just a radical change in her functioning. And a very small study, but still, I think, consistent with what Laura Lee showed, showed that the kids with autism not only can begin to often communicate more, but some of their autistic symptoms having to do with trouble socializing change. They just become more social. And these are based on brain exercises that sort of rewire the brain and rebuild the part of the brain that processes language and communication kind of from the ground up. They start with very simple sounds that babies would make, and they get more and more complicated, and so that the children can form very crisp or clear recordings of the sounds they hear, and it leads to a spontaneous outflow of language. And then the next thing that Dr. Mersenick did is he started to work not only with people with learning disorders, but the other end of the spectrum, with what's called age-related cognitive decline, which is the kind of thing that begins in our 30s, but we notice in our 50s when we have senior moments and start to forget things. And another company he works with called Posit Science developed this extraordinary program that can reverse that age-related memory loss, so that in some cases, in the outcome can be such that a person who is 80 years old can start to function like someone who's 25 years younger. One of the people I spoke with for the book is another doctor. Sometimes doctors get in on early treatments because they're attentive to it. His Dr. Stanley Karansky, 90 years old. How old is that? Well, he was a medic at D-Day, and he was a fairly active person, but he started to notice in his 80s, and that in certain respects he was slowing down. There were signs of decreased cognitive capacity. He was speaking less. Language wasn't flowing as easily. He says, "I like to drive fast, but his driving wasn't as good as it had been. His handwriting started to deteriorate again, a sign of a certain degree of brain deterioration."
Sure, sure.
And he did this program. And basically, all those things reversed, and he became much more communicative again. And many people who have done that program find that their ability to remember things is radically improved.
Amazing.
That's so important, because we used to think that as you get older, all that happens is it's simply a matter of decay. But it turns out that it's a use it or lose it brain, and if you can set the exercises properly, you don't have to deteriorate as you grow older. You can actually reverse deterioration.
The book is The Brain That Changes Itself. We're talking with the author, Dr. Norman Doidge. A fascinating, fascinating one story after another about what's happening on the frontiers of brain science. And the phone lines are open at 977-1070. Susan is on the line. Susan, you're on with Dr. Norman Doidge. Go right ahead.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
I have two questions for you. The first is, do you do any research with thyroid hormone and brain function? And the second are you doing any research, or is anyone, on dopamine receptors versus acetylcholine?
I don't have anything on thyroid in there, in the book, but there is a lot of research on plasticity on those two brain chemicals, dopamine and acetylcholine. One of the things dopamine does is it's called, it has to do with reward. When
right.
you do something,
feel good.
Yeah, it makes you feel good. But it turns out that when you do something, when you accomplish an important goal, your brain secretes dopamine, and it both makes you feel good, but it also consolidates the connections between the nerves and the circuits that led to that accomplishment. So dopamine is very, very important in brain plasticity.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one, acetylcholine, is something that's very important in sharpening our memories and helping us to develop brain circuits with sharp memories. And mm-hmm. so there's a lot about that.
And in your book?
Yes.
Oh, and dopamine as well?
Yes.
Oh, Okay, and will your this is a question for Coy.
Yes.
Will your will you have this man's name and book on the website for Winna?
It will actually be on the Charlotte. We can put it up. Yeah, let's. Matt says yes. We can put it up there. And as a matter of fact, Susan, if you want to hang on, I actually have an extra copy of the book. I'd be happy to give it to you.
Oh, how kind of you!
Absolutely.
Thank you.
So just hang on just a minute, and Matt will hook you up and make sure that you know how to get that. We've got about a minute left, but what is it you think if there's one message you really want to get out to people? I know there's a lot of people listening because you're talking about, you know, so many things here that touch people's lives. You know, we all get old, and I'm only 41, but I'm already forgetting stuff.
Well, that's normal, but the most important thing to remember is that it is a use-it-or-lose-it brain. And if you think if you start to lose a capacity, we tend to think mistakenly that it's our fate to lose it. But that's when you have to concentrate. And it's important to do things you enjoy doing that are intellectually very stimulating and are new things. So if you want to preserve your brain health, what you must do is not just dance the old dances. You have to learn new dances.
Interesting.
You always have to concentrate or pay attention as much as you did in high school when you were learning a new vocabulary. And don't be fooled by the rigidity you see in your own character or in your own functioning. Much of that can be overcome. Plasticity is like snow on a hill. Because it's pliable, you can take many paths down that hill. But because it's pliable, if you keep taking the same path, you develop tracks and you look rigid. And many of the things that are rigid about us are actually not proof that our brain is rigid. It's actually an effect of plasticity. So when you see these rigidities in yourself, what you have to do is really try something new and give your brain a little time.
And staring at the same TV shows every night is probably not recommended.
No, it's a little too passive.
Dr. Norman Doidge, the book is The Brain That Changes Itself, Stories of Personal Triumph from the Frontiers of Brain Science. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at sevillepodcast.com. On the other side of this break, we'll talk with Ian Stewart, mathematician, about his new book, Why Beauty is Truth, A History of Symmetry. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now on News Radio 1070.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit sevillepodcast.com for more.